Welcome to Brand Disciples. We're calling a generation of entrepreneurs to be on mission as we equip the church to disciple them. I'm Amy Alexander. I love seeing people inside and outside the church walls, empowered to be on mission every single day. I'm built to display Jesus to the world as I teach biblical truth and shepherd people in their journey. As always, I'm joined by David Mills.
Hey, good to be with you and excited to talk about this. I am wired to touch the world like Jesus as someone who is apostolic and evangelistic. What that really means is I'm passionate about getting people on mission and helping them take steps toward Jesus. I love to live on the margin between the church and the marketplace.
Thanks for joining today's Coffee Talk, where Dave and I explore the world of missional entrepreneurship over a cup of coffee. We're in the middle of a series based on the book from Alan Hirsch, 5Q, Reactivating the Original Intelligence and Capacity of the Body of Christ. The premise of this book is simple. Ephesians in the Bible is a crucial tool in helping us understand how to be an effective Christian and an effective body of Christ, wherever that is, right? The body of Christ is inside church walls, but it's also in our neighborhoods, in our homes, in our workplace, in the marketplace. It's everywhere. Ephesians 4, 1 through 16 gives us unique insight into creating unity and maturity as believers and the role that diverse gifts play in our journey to maturity as a whole. The church must be united and then allow for and appreciate diversity of gifts in order to become mature. For these first few episodes, we want to dive in depth about the Ephesians 4 gifts, also known as the ascension gifts. Ephesians 4:11 says, "So Christ himself gave the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, the shepherds, and the teachers." If you're interested in understanding this assessment that comes from 5Q, there's a link in the show notes. You can learn more about your own gifting, but here's the basic premise. Jesus gifted the church. Again, the church is anywhere and everywhere, even in the marketplace as entrepreneurs. He gifted each of us himself in these five gifts. And 5Q has done an amazing job of taking capital T truth and articulating that and creating a process and a way to understand that for ourselves and think about that. 5Q, and this assessment, of course, is not capital T truth, but it is a great way to discuss it, appreciate it, and learn how to apply what's true in Ephesians to our everyday lives.
So these gifts are really cool in a couple of ways, and they apply to what you're doing in the marketplace in a really significant way, because just like I do, that I bring my whole self to the work. I bring my whole self to the business environment. And even though maybe people try and put rules around me or tell me what I shouldn't do, I still am bringing my gifts and my talents. And so those gifts, understanding those, is really important to being a good leader and to creating a healthy environment. And what's even more important is that these gifts allow you to focus really maturing based upon who Jesus is, rather than some random inventory that somebody gives you based upon how the rest of the world behaves. Our job, our role, is to model ourselves after Jesus. And these five gifts are actually an expression of him as he's gifted them to us. And so as we think about this and grow in these, we become more like him and we express Jesus in the marketplace. And that's the goal.
With that, let's dive into today's episode. We are diving into the shepherding gift, which is almost the second to last. We're almost at the end there. I will note for you, if you're reading this out of some other translation, the ESV lists shepherds instead of pastors. Most other translations say pastors, but just so you know, that word right there, the Greek, is translated as a shepherd or shepherd in really every other place in the New Testament. So shepherd's a much greater expression or description for this. And it also kind of removes those connotations we have with the word pastor. So that's why we list it there as shepherd. And to be shepherding at its core is to walk alongside and carry people in the family of God. I have shepherding as my secondary gift, my voice. So it's actually the way that, not the way I view the world, because that would be my primary gifting, but as my secondary gift, it's the way I interact with the world. So what are your kind of initial thoughts on shepherding, Dave?
I do appreciate you sharing that, the fact that the Greek really favors this idea of shepherd, because I think we have to decouple this passage in Ephesians from what the kind of common person might think a pastor is, because a pastor is really like a church title that gets used basically for whoever's leading in a local church. And so I think that's important to decouple that. So for me, shepherding is actually my fourth gift in terms of just strength of it. And so I have a perspective about this, and I've had that role of being the official pastor, but that doesn't mean that I'm necessarily really wired as a shepherd.
Yeah.
Right.
What's interesting is that shepherds and teachers, these are the gifts we expect out of our pastors. So when the person who holds the title of pastor at our local church doesn't have these gifts strongly, they will be criticized for not doing, quote unquote, their job. And I think, Dave, you shared before, you have been called a pastor with weird gifts. And I think that's the heart of that, right? Is like, why are you not shepherdy and teachy? Why are you so catalytic and evangelistic? Like people just, whether or not on a conscious level, they just expect a certain thing from a pastor.
Yeah, I think we got this role that we have in the American church. We got it from the Catholic Episcopalian tradition. And there is a single person who's in charge of the building. And this Ephesians 4 passage, though, is, I think, important because it really speaks to the fact that everybody should be doing the thing that they're gifted to do. We should all be like Jesus in the way we are uniquely created to be like Jesus and not try and be something that we're not. Now, that's not to say I do some shepherdy kind of stuff. I don't think I do it maybe as well as others who do it. I do it because it needs to be done. Some people need to be encouraged and need to be tended to and loved on.
Yeah.
So that's like, not like exclusive province of those who have the gift. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, I had lunch with a gifted shepherd yesterday. And you know what? It felt really good. It just felt really good to hang out because I just felt like I was being cared for. And that person didn't even have to do anything except be themselves. And it was just really a blessing. So,
yeah. Yeah. So to put this in context, we've talked about apostolic people. They're starters. They're the ones who go out and they're sent, and they start new communities. We've talked about prophetic people who keep the vision and the heart of God in those communities and make sure that they're staying in covenant relationship. We talked about evangelistic people who go out outside the system or the family or the business and bring new people in. And so shepherding is the role for the people who are in the system. They're already customers. They're already in the family of God. They already are in, quote unquote, the club. And the deep desire for that shepherding person is to walk alongside those people, to long suffer with them, to bring meals when they have a new baby or when someone has died, to check in, to remember, to pray for, to encourage. Like, it's this nurturing thing. And so that's the core of what the shepherding role is intended to do. What's interesting, the more that I have learned about this gifting and experienced it and grown in it and allowed the Lord to show me how to use it, I have found that even people outside the family, quote unquote, can experience my shepherding gift because I understand it. And it's different than an evangelistic experience. But I have people in my life that I am shepherding toward Jesus who aren't in the family yet. And while I can't do it really in the most perfect way because they don't know Jesus, they can still experience what it feels like to be shepherded. Jesus the shepherd, Jesus the one who goes for the lost sheep, Jesus the one that pays attention, that sees people. They can still experience that if I acknowledge that it needs to happen. So they can have a shepherding experience. And that's been a really interesting new thing for me to discover. Oh, wow, I'm shepherding people even outside the system to an extent.
Yeah.
Because it's just part of how I'm built.
It reminds me of that passage in Matthew 9:36 where, you know, Jesus comes to Jerusalem and says, when he saw the crowds, he was deeply moved with compassion for them because they were troubled and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. So there's this, I guess in some ways, like the inside and outside paradigm might be a little bit flawed. Those who, clearly we do know people that are connected and committed, they're pretty obvious. But we can also tell the people that are disconnected and not committed, but it's not like there's a magical line that they come across. And if they, the real thing that happens is like when their hearts turn and they begin to want to seek him at that moment, as they come toward him, the shepherding role is to help them on that journey. That's how I would see it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's really good. That is a centered set way of thinking about it. And we've talked maybe before on this series about centered set, but just for the sake of talking about it, some bodies of believers believe in a closed set or a bounded set. And what that means is that there's this magical line you cross when you are like, now I'm saved and I'm a child of God. And then when you're outside of that, then you are like not in the family. But a centered set believes that anyone pointed toward Jesus, anyone going toward Jesus is in the family. You're in the club, you're in, and only Jesus knows what that means or where their heart is at. But we as believers can shepherd people and disciple people as long as they're walking toward Jesus. Yeah. I'd love to read some of the key phrases for people who have shepherding in their couplet. So, prophetic shepherd, I care because God cares. An apostolic shepherd, God so loved the world, so I must go. Teacher shepherd, which is what I am, I understand so I can help others. Feels very true for me. Evangelistic shepherd, I care so you will deeply commit. Shepherd apostle, I go because they need to be loved. Shepherd prophet, because I love people, I love them with God's love. Shepherd evangelist, in the right place for the right care. And shepherd teacher, I explain clearly because I care deeply. So there is this sort of love. I'm not sure there's any other gifting that leads with so much of that sort of sappy love thing. And it's not just sappy, but I do think shepherding people tend to be these very, we just like love. I don't know.
Love's great. By contrast, God's love is the best. If you contrast that, the apostolic people really like people to be on mission, right? It's directional. They want them moving toward or outwards. The prophetic people really want people to be like in line with, not like legalistically, but in God's heart. And then the evangelist people, they value like the steps, making the steps toward. So the shepherding person is really valuing something different, right? They're valuing this experience of being cared for and being connected to other people. And so I think those are, and then of course the teacher really values getting it right.
Yeah. The thing about shepherding is that it can be maybe the slowest, most considered, most restful of the gifts. To be shepherded isn't to be in a hurry. To be shepherded isn't to necessarily have a place you're going. It's to, as you said, experience being held by the Father. It's to experience complete trust. There's this thing that I tried to do with my children that they just hated so much. Finally stopped. I'll probably try when they're a little older. But it requires eye contact, which I think is why I bother them so much. They're both five, so direct eye contact with their mother for a long period of time is a little painful. But it's this ritual you can do with your children where you look them in the eyes and you say, can you see my eyes? And they say, yes. You say, can you see that my eyes are looking at your eyes? And they say, yes. And then you say, do you know that I love you no matter what you do? They say yes. So it's like this experience. It's exactly what we do with God in this shepherding moment. We're not just looking at God. We're looking at God look at us and love us completely without condition. And that's being in a family, not necessarily catalytic or any of those things. It's not going anywhere. It's just being his son or daughter. So that, you to know, me, I that's did- such a good practice.
I think it's really interesting when you think about that in a couple of different ways. One is, if you think about that from a business perspective, like the number of people that just want to belong, the number of people that buy stuff so they can be part of a group, so they can look like they're part of a group. There's this aching to be a part of something bigger. The identity part of, think about the cars that drive down the road. So much of what people are driving is about their identity, their clothing. So I think from the business perspective, this ability to gather and to retain and keep people connected is a really powerful thing. But I also think, like, for the other, some of the other giftings, like for me, if you think about a sheep and what a shepherd does, like they walk along with the sheep and they get them to where there's something good to eat. And then they just wait while they chew. That is like, that just makes me crazy. Makes me completely crazy. Like my sheep, they're going somewhere. Mm-hmm. My sheep are not just sitting around chewing, being happy and enjoying the weather. Like my sheep have to be like on the trail. So it's like, in terms of how you're wired. So like from a business perspective, you can tell, are you happy when you just have some happy customers who just enjoy your services, or you're not happy unless like you have to have those customers charging the hill with you to create a new thing or open a new market or recruit their friends. So I do think this is a unique skill. It's a unique gift that's really, it's part of the fabric. It's part of the family fabric of who God is. It's part of this family structure that he's creating.
The way we've described shepherds so far, those would feel like pastoral care, spiritual directors, relational glue, creating a place of healing and discipleship, counselors. There's another side of the shepherding piece that is actually one I don't feel is super strong in either my personality or maybe it's a weakness in my gifting. But the other piece of a shepherd that can be really loud for people is protector. These are like police officers, first responders, people that are like extremely protective of members of their family. And this, to me, I actually see this in my mind. This is the masculine gifting of God and the feminine gifting of God, but I don't think that's actually true. I think plenty of women are protective and plenty of men are like feelers. But in my mind, it is this sort of, what does it look like to be like an active, strong shepherd is to be on the front lines, protecting and caring and paying attention and keeping the flock safe from the wolves. And there's a whole other side of shepherd that we probably don't talk about that much.
And I think if you compare that to, when you think about police officers, like some of them really are about creating safe and nurturing environments. They want people to be able to live their lives. But some of them are actually trying to stop injustice, which is actually more of a kind of prophetic thing, right? So the protective thing is, to me, it still circles around this family idea. And I don't know if maybe the shepherd has to be pushed into it, because I don't know that, I'm hardly one, so I can't say, but I would imagine that it might be the thing that is a response, a protective response that gets turned on when there is something that is creating danger, right?
Yeah. It's something I've paid attention to because I'm always interested in this nuance. And I have since met many fathers who were like the nurturing, sometimes, a lot of times the mom's nurturing, but sometimes it's the dad that's nurturing. And I've noticed several fathers in my life who are actually natural nurturers more than their wives are, but they also are in the military. And so you can see this Papa Bear strong on the front lines, but still shepherding thing. It's a really cool.
Interesting, yeah.
It's a cool gift. Yeah, I wish I was a little more protective. And maybe I am and I don't realize it, but it's not something that comes to mind for me much. So the other thing that happens to shepherds when we talk about super immature shepherding is that a truly immature shepherd is someone who cares for everybody else, but they have no boundaries for caring for themselves. So they become these really unhealthy people. They're exhausted, super mentally unwell, sometimes even to the detriment of their family. Like maybe they'll care for everybody else, but they won't care for their husband and their children, or they'll care for others at the expense of their husband and children or their spouse and their children. And so it's something that shepherds have to learn. We have to learn how to have boundaries, how to set people down. and say, actually, I don't carry you. Jesus carries you. I'm just here to hold you and pray for you. I don't actually carry you. It also tends to be a really good gift for counselors, but the same thing happens. Counselors become sponges. They take on the pain of other people and then they just are wrecked. And so even like professional counselors have to know how to box people and how to put people in these sort of other spaces in their head so they don't carry around the pain and the sorrow and all the personal stuff.
It's interesting if you think about that in the life of an entrepreneur. There are some entrepreneurs that are really tuned in to their customers and their employees, and that can consume you. That can eat you alive. And you can go so far over the top to take care of people that you don't take care of yourself or your business. And like, there does have to be boundaries. And I also think that, I guess I wonder, in terms of just creating maturity for shepherds, is belonging, does it also include helping people to become responsible? If you're nurturing someone and helping them grow up, don't you want them to feed themselves and bathe themselves? And like with your children, you want them to clean, they want to clean up after themselves and pick up your room and go to the bathroom and all on your own. So I do think like part of this shepherding thing is also about wanting others to make their own relationships and to step up. And I think from a, like in a business setting, that's really important because we want our customers and our employees to participate and to contribute, because it's not a one-way deal. We're just delivering value to them and they don't contribute. Anyway, so I don't know where the boundary on that is or what the balance is, but I think there's something to that when it comes to caring about the whole person and wanting them to grow up and not letting them stay and wallow in their ickiness or their immaturity or their selfishness. Because like people will take whatever they can get from you. They just will.
Yeah. I know in my own business world, where this has shown up the most is with vendors and employees. Because I feel that these are family members. They're an extension of my family. I feel responsible to care for them. It has not been as obvious of a connection for me with customers. And I've had to actually teach myself a little bit about that. Teach myself, actually, customers are people who need to be shepherded. It's really easy with employees and vendors because you feel so responsible for them. And again, this can go to a place, I think, of peacekeeping versus peacemaking. And shepherds have to learn how to not allow themselves to be conflict avoidant, but how to actually get into the conflict and make peace for people, which sometimes is uncomfortable and doesn't feel good. But peacemaking, not peacekeeping, is part of caring for your family. But again, when it comes to customers, what would happen if we really ignited that gifting and saw every single customer as someone who needed to be shepherded to some degree? Talk about amazing, talk about kingdom customer service, like not just amazing customer service, not just ethical customer service, but like redemptive customer service. That'd be pretty cool.
I was just laughing because you said customers are people too, or customers are people. And I'm thinking like, you need to tell the apostolic people that customers are people and tell the prophetic people, customers are people. They're humans. Yeah. So I do think like one of the important roles of the shepherd is to remind everybody else that everyone else is human.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're dealing with fragile humans.
That's a really good point. And I think another place that this can show up for shepherds, often shepherding people tend to be the sustainers. They take roles. They're likely you're not going to be a salesperson. Likely you're not going to be a business developer. Although you could be those things because you connect with people. Sometimes we see like evangelistic people who have a shepherding couplet. They're both things. Mm-hmm. They're both evangelistic and shepherding. But sometimes shepherding people are often there on the fulfillment side. And another place this can show up is being the person who's constantly reminding those that are bringing new business in that if you promise something I can't deliver on, then we've really done that new person a disservice. Right? And that can be forgotten by people who are naturally evangelistic or apostolic or like salespeople and marketing people. They forget how important the fulfillment experience is for that person. It's the difference between you can make revenue, great, but it's the difference between actually serving someone well and really doing something that's valuable for them.
Hmm. That's good. That's really good. I was thinking about people jumping in the middle of this podcast, they might wonder, like, why are we talking about this Ephesians 4 stuff so much? And I think that it's just important to remember, we talk about shepherds. We believe and we think that in Ephesians 4, we have this creation blueprint that describes the redemptive way that God wants humans to be in these five areas. And shepherding, I think you can see in this conversation, maybe more than many others, this role of shepherding is part of the redemptive expression of God on the planet. And so you'll hear in the public space someone ranging from, why can't we just get along, to let there be peace on earth? You have people that are peaceniks. They're after unity and togetherness. And part of that, I think, is this redemptive drive that we want people to be connected to each other. And the number of people in our culture that are just so disconnected from humans is just really sad. And I think it's the digital space and the pseudo relationships we get in social media, even Zoom stuff. We never really touch anyone or smell their breath, right? We just look at them on a picture. So it becomes performative relationships rather than real relationships. And so the shepherd is really one of the people who is fighting for this real part of humanity that God put in us, which is that we're supposed to be connected, right?
Yeah.
We're supposed to let other people act in our lives.
Yeah, I think it's really easy, especially in our culture, to say, I have Jesus. We joke around all the time. Even at our church, we joke around all the time. I really love Jesus, but those Jesus followers, I love church, but it's the people, which is true. People are hard, but we have to remember how deeply true it is, how core it is to the message of the New Testament, that God uses people. People are the hands and feet of Jesus. Jesus speaks to us personally, of course, but more than anything, we experience God through other people who know him and who are acting on his behalf. And when we disconnect from that, it's really bad. We get into really bad places.
Speaking from an apostolic-ish perspective, there's this danger if you have these shepherdy kind of gifts in your life. I guess the question for me would be, and of course, I'm looking through my own lens, I would wonder, what are you getting people attached to? Are you using your entire life's purpose of being this shepherd person to get people attached to a soccer club or to a particular bar? Or are you bringing them to the Father who wants to adopt them into his family and then introduce them to other people that have also been adopted? We're all a bunch of adopted misfits. Yeah. We don't look alike. We don't act alike. We don't think alike. But yet he, the Father, has put us in this family together. We'll talk about motley crew. We think of the disciples as a motley crew, but the whole body of Christ is a motley crew. And so I think there is a level of accountability when you have a gift, responsibility. And I think how you attach people, what you attach people to, and what you go along with, and thinking that belonging to a alumni association is at the same kind of level as belonging to the people of God, they're not the same. And certainly it's good to be a part of clubs and groups, and it's certainly better than being alone, but in the end, it doesn't take people to that redemptive place. I do think the shepherd has to think about the health of the sheep. He's not going to let them eat on loco weed. We lived in California, I took a job one summer. I can't remember how old I was or what I was doing, but I got this part-time job, and we would go out into this alfalfa field, and we had these really long poles, and we had torches on the end. They were 6 or 8 foot poles attached to a giant rolling propane tank. And we went out with these giant poles, and we burned these weeds. It was called dotter weed. And the dotter weed would kind of snake its way around all the alfalfa and choke it out, right? So, and the only way to get rid of it was to burn it. So this guy and I, we walk around in the field all day with these torches and burn stuff. But that was all because that was going to choke out the fuel, the food for the livestock that was going to eat that stuff, right? So I guess the shepherd has to be, you know, and that speaks back to that protective thing you're talking about, thinking about the weeds in people's lives and how they are choking things out. And I guess the response is different than the response of someone who's prophetic, who says, hey, God doesn't want that for you. But the shepherd still cares about if the sheep is getting bloated on daisies or if they're eating good, clean alfalfa. So
for sure.
I'm asking the question really more than I'm telling, because I can only speak to this through my jaded apostolic lenses.
Yeah, but you certainly understand the role it fills. I do. I think that all kinds of giftings overlap in their ability to create change in the same places, but the avenue by which that change happens is different. So a prophetic person, the way that they call that out is going to be different than a shepherding person, but they both have to call it out. What else is really interesting about this time in history is that shepherds can very easily fall prey to a couple of things. One of them is pseudo-shepherding, and the other is pretend capacity. Okay, I just came up with these, but I'm going to go for it. Pseudo-shepherding. Pseudo-shepherding is when you are an influencer, or you think that being an influencer with millions of followers fills the shepherding hole. That is pseudo-shepherding, and while there's nothing inherently wrong with being an influencer necessarily, that's a discussion for a different day, we have to know what purpose does that take in our business development? And when it fills a need to shepherd, it is fake. It is a counterfeit to the shepherding that actually needs to happen. So don't fall prey to pseudo shepherding, because you're not actually shepherding anybody on social media. The other side of that coin is fake capacity, or was that what I called it? I don't know. Which is, it is pretend capacity, okay? We are connected to hundreds of, thousands of, millions of people on the internet. We do not, as shepherds, have capacity to shepherd more than a handful at any given time. So you have to have very clear boundaries in your own life about where shepherding stops and where just loving people because everyone deserves to be loved starts, right? And we cannot hand shepherd more people simply because we're connected to more people. Like, we are built to be in small communities and villages with access to only a few hundred people, maybe. That's what we're really built for.
Yeah.
To be in daily access to just like 20 people or something. Like, we have to really know.
It fits with the management understanding that, like, your span of control has to be limited. How many people you're actually managing has to be limited. Because you can only really directly manage so many people, right? And when you have these huge flat organizations where one person manages 300 people, the reality is they're not managing anybody. They're not really serving anybody. But I do think that the other part of this is that if you think about a real shepherd and real sheep, like, the shepherd doesn't do everything by themselves. They have sheepdogs. And then they also have sheep that lead, the bellwether, and lead the other sheep. So part of this process is not just about doing it yourself, but it's about cultivating a group of people in which the group can move together and the group can protect itself together. And of course, baby sheep learn from adult sheep. And so there is this natural element that it's not just about your efforts, but it's also about what you can cultivate in the sense of healthy family and healthy communities that actually serve each other and help each other grow up. So I think that's important. The other side, the other thing I would say, Amy, is that this might be straying out of the shepherding thing, possibly, so you can tell me if it is, but it seems that one of the other traps we have is that we have these false definitions that are out there for what it means to be part of a group. And so one of the false definitions in our culture right now is you can never disagree or criticize anybody else's thing, right? They have the right to UBU. They have the right to self-determination, self-definition, even to the point where we'd say that about gender, right? You can't even tell people what their gender is. So I do think that a shepherd can, because they are very people-oriented, they can easily fall prey to kind of redefinition of what is a healthy community to look like. What does a healthy family look like? What does a healthy human look like? And I do think that's where they need a few friends who are prophetic, who say, hey, hey, that's not the way, right? That's not what we do. Don't eat that cactus over there because it's going to hurt your mouth. So I do think that's one of the issues we face right now is these, you said false capacity, pseudo-shepherding. I would say pseudo-communities that are based upon false premises or actual destructive premises. And I will say that this tactic is used also to lead people into very bad stuff. So the ability to gather and corral and nurture people, like where you're nurturing them to is really important because you could nurture them. You could go to Guyana and join with Jim Jones, right? And serve the Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
And there are people like this is happening in our culture in significant ways. People are being groomed into these communities of support that insulate them and reinforce them in basically destructive living. Mm-hmm. And so I do think there is responsibility on this. And I think we underestimate the importance of this. Put your sheep out there in the field and just have no one watching them. You're trusting to the barbed wire.
I think the pitfall for a shepherd is a shepherd, when their sheep strayed, brought the sheep back and broke its legs. No sheep, don't do that again. In fact, I won't even let you do it. I'm actually going to hurt you so that you know how very much you are not allowed to do that. And a shepherd's pitfall is, that's okay. Hey, you're so loved, right? Like a shepherd's pitfall is just, it's cool. You come here. It's okay. Like to have no corrective piece, that's not true shepherding.
The biblical shepherd has a rod and a staff. They have a crook and a staff, right? Not just one. Yeah. And part of that staff is for beating off the wolves as well as correcting the sheep and prodding them. So there is a prodding part of this. This is not always just lovey-dovey. Sometimes this is cajoling, it's nudging, it's encouraging, it's asking again.
It's not a love without truth. Yeah. I think that's probably an important nuance, right? It's not just love. It is love and truth coupled. That's the way Jesus loved. It wasn't just truth, it wasn't just love, it was both things. If this is something a gifting you think you might have, you can take the assessment. We'll make sure the link's in the show notes. I would absolutely encourage you, as we have been doing at the end of each of these episodes, go read in the New Testament and even the Old Testament. Go read stories of God and Jesus, Father and Jesus, doing this, being a shepherd. There's so many of them. You'll learn so much about the right way to do this and how we're created to do it just by reading what he did.
Yeah, awesome.
Cool.
Thanks for your insights.
Yeah, thank you, Dave. See you guys next week for the teaching gift.